This is an important step in human evolution. So much so that from now on, I will stop addressing you and all of your friends as cave somethings. With the level of prosperity that money-based economies give you over barter-based ones, you can all get out of those smelly caves and enjoy stone houses and castles. The best in Bitcoin made audible. You're listening to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. What's up, guys? Feeling bullish AF on Bitcoin lately. So much happening, and more specifically, lightning is just blowing me away lately. Actually just made another rather large payment on Lightning. I think it's probably my second largest payment that I've ever made for the BitBlock Boom dinner that happens on the 28th. By the way, if you haven't gotten your BitBlock Boom tickets, like, that shit is right around the corner. Offer code CC for 30% discount. You gotta come out to Dallas. It's the end of the world, guys. You know, like, there's nothing after 2020, so this is basically the last Bitcoin conference ever. You gotta come. It's just amazing how much I've been able to use Lightning lately. I don't think I've made an on-chain payment in like a month or two. I'm excluding my auto withdrawal from Swan Bitcoin here, because they instituted that payment automatically on my behalf. And you better be stacking sats with swanbitcoin.com/guy for all the dum-dums in the U.S. who, aren't doing it yet. I think I could list off the top of my head like 20 or 30 transactions I've done on Lightning recently. It's just getting so much better every day. So if you guys haven't checked it out yet, just a recommendation, I would start with Strike, the Breeze wallet, this BREEZ, and I actually really like the custodial wallets like Blue Wallet and Wallet of Satoshi, particularly if you're just going to like start out and you just want to tinker. Let's go ahead and get into our read. Don't want to distract too much before we get into Guy's take here. We are hitting Giacomo Zucco's series again. We're jumping into part three of the Discovering Bitcoin series from Bitcoin Magazine. And this one's titled Introducing Money. So go back and hit part one and two for the groundwork of this episode. But for now, let's jump into Discovering Bitcoin Part 3, Introducing Money. This is the third installment of Bitcoiner Giacomo Zucco's series, Discovering Bitcoin, a brief overview from cavemen to the Lightning Network. Read the introduction to his series, Discovering Bitcoin Part 1 about time and Part 2 about people. In this installment of the Discovering Bitcoin series, we will build on the previously acquired strategies of exchanging wealth, specializing production, and focusing on goods with good physical hardness, scaleness, and darkness to explore concepts of scarcity, liquidity, and social hardness. From barter to liquidity maximization. This third step along our Plan A for money will focus on the topic of scarcity and on the question of what. In Part 2, you invented and popularized practices such as exchange and specialization, enabling an unprecedented level of wealth and cooperation. Good job! There is still a problem, though. In the context of barter, which is what you and your fellow cave people are practicing now, utility grows with the number of people exchanging, but the friction to match demand and supply for every good versus any other grows as well, since the number of all possible combinations increases quickly. This problem has two sides. One concerns how to calculate, communicate, and keep track of all the combinations of trading couples. Each caveman must declare how much of everything he would accept in exchange for everything else. The other concerns liquidity within different pairs. In many scenarios, the exchange simply cannot happen because of what economists call the non-coincidence of wants. Alice has something Bob wants, but not the other way around, or at least not in that moment. The former side can be mitigated with advancements in information technologies, such as the invention of writing, to keep track of different combinations, while the latter can be mitigated by delaying the actual delivery of one of the two exchanged goods, basically the invention of credit, which is very useful where the wants do not coincide if considered in real time, but would instead coincide in different time frames. But the problem still exists, slowing down the specialization process. 2. Convergence. In order for commerce to keep going, your little cave economy must converge towards some specific kind of good, namely the one with the best combination of monetary attributes, which will always represent one side of every trade in order to simplify calculation and bridge liquidity with respect to every other good. This practice is known as indirect exchange. Alice trades what she offers for this bridge good, which she will later trade again for something that she wants. The great news is that you don't have to try to convince your cave friends one by one. This switch naturally happens due to so-called network effects. The value of a network increases more than linearly with the number of participants, creating a kind of gravitational black hole effect. The goods that fare better in hardness, scaleness, and darkness will compete, and the first one to reach a critical mass will start swallowing the others, as far as monetary uses are concerned. In the mental model, we have now moved in Plan A from investment to specialization and now convergence. Cave ladies and cave gentlemen, introducing money. It serves 3 functions. The first is a store of value, which was actually already served by our stored goods within the context of pre-convergence barter economies. The others are unit of account and medium of exchange, which are the answers to the problems of pricing and liquidity, respectively. This is an important step in human evolution, so much so that from now on, I will stop addressing you and all of your friends as cave somethings. With the level of prosperity that money-based economies give you over barter-based ones, you can all get out of those smelly caves and enjoy stone houses and castles. How to get good money. So you just entered the magical world of so-called commodity money. Historical examples are seashells, beads, spices, squirrel pelts, dolphin teeth, tea bricks, salt, the word salary actually comes from that, and sheep, the word pecuniary from that. But now you have to face another challenge, once again related to the problem of salability across time. Back to the when question. Imagine you've convinced your tribe to use smoked fish as money. This created more demand than the one granted by food consumption alone. Not only do people want to eat it, but they now also want to use it as money. Its price shows what is called a monetary premium. This incentivizes you to restructure your enterprise in order to produce more of it, but then you can increase the global smoked fish supply. And the price is a result of demand and supply. If the latter keeps increasing while the former doesn't, the price will start falling. So even if smoked fish remains as durable as before in a physical sense, it will perform poorly as a way to store value across time. Price dynamics affect hardness in a social way. In the context of solitary consumption, the good would still maintain its ability to provide utility over time. But in the more advanced context of a monetary economy, that ability actually drops. And a lousy store of value cannot be a good medium of exchange, since nobody wants to lose value storing it for indirect exchange. It's not just a smoked fish thing. It's very general. The more any good gets used as money, the more interesting it becomes for its typical producers to increase the supply in order to profit. The more the supply increases, the less that good can be used as money. This cycle isn't a smooth and gradual negative feedback loop that tends toward equilibrium over time. The changes to the production structure in order to increase the supply take some time to be done and aren't easily undone after the value decreases. The typical outcome is more of a boom and bust kind. There are many historical examples of this money trap, usually involving disastrous outcomes. This is typical of goods with a low stock-to-flow ratio, where even small percentages of change in the flow, the amount of good produced or extracted in a unit of time, are comparatively huge, and thus particularly disruptive with respect to the stock, the amount already circulating in the economy. Social hardness. You soon realize that seashells trapped on your fishing nets, which you use to collect, provide a better money than your deliciously useful smoked fish in this regard. And that those relatively useless gold nuggets you used to collect on the shelf next to seashells are even better. Actually, you would probably want to use both gold and silver. The reason is that they perform better on different sides of the scaleness spectrum. While gold is more portable, silver is more divisible. Indeed, commodities that possess a consumption value higher than their monetary premium are not very good candidates for monetary use. Since they get consumed, their stock tends to diminish, lowering their stock-to-flow ratio. In this sense, commodity money is more an evolution of collectibles than of actual industrial commodities. Different terms are used to address the attribute of having a supply that tends to remain inelastic with respect to increases in the demand, keeping its value over time. Various sources call it soundness, unforgeable costliness, or unforgeability. I will extend the word hardness, which we already used for the physical side of the durability problem, equating it with the more general concept of salability across time, in a physical and social sense as well. So in our mental model now, hardness is a consequence of both durability and unforgeability. This is a jump back to the when column. To complete our analysis of the relation between time and value, the higher the degree of hardness of some monetary good, the more resistant it is to having its value compromised, either by physical decay or by supply inflation. And again, in our mental model, convergence is again reliant on our new understanding of hardness. The question of hardness influences the process of monetary convergence. Any monetary good that can have its supply cheaply and easily increased will rapidly destroy the wealth of those using it as a store of value. For a good to assume a dominant monetary role within an economy, it must exhibit superior hardness to competing monetary goods. When discussing hardness, purely economic considerations overlap with ideological, political, and ethical ones, just like with darkness. As noted in Part 1, they mostly have to do with the notion of time preference, a topic with deep ramifications in sociology, but they also relate to the problem of inflation as a way to transfer wealth, and the problem of interest rate manipulation as a cause of financial crises. So far, you've learned to advise your trade partners to converge over a single good to maximize liquidity, to choose that good among the ones with a better mix of physical, hardness, scaleness, and darkness, and to consider the social, supply-related aspect of hardness along with the physical one. In a word, you have basically discovered money. But can you make it better? This is something you will discover in Discovering Bitcoin Part 4, A Wrong Turn. A new plan is needed. All right, that is Part 3 of Giacomo Zucco's Discovering Bitcoin series. introducing money. And I really want to get into Guy's take on this one, because this really wraps up the thoughts, like kind of the lessons learned in part one and part two, and introduces a critical aspect of why monetary hardness is so much more important than merely the ability to be durable over time for that good. It's why a monetary good is such a unique and extremely specific set of characteristics within a market economy. We will get into that in just a second. Let's go ahead and hit our sponsor, and then we will jump back into Guy's take. One of the most important takeaways from this, from part three here, when we're introducing money, is that the most important use of money, what makes it money, is that it is the most liquid good in a market economy. And it becomes that through the hardness characteristics that he had talked about before, but as it becomes used for the monetary function, it creates a monetary premium. It becomes so useful as money that its hardness, its durability, simply as a good to store value, suddenly needs a new attribute: the inability to be forged, to be made cheaply. And that's where something like smoked fish or glass beads or seashells start to diverge in how they can be used, because a monetary premium of something starts to be used for its network effect when other people begin to use it as an indirect exchange source, a way to, I have smoked fish now, and you're going to have a pair of shoes that I want at the end of the week. Well, I'll just sell my smoked fish now for that good, which is going to hold its value the longest. Again, in the original sense of hardness, simply something that survives for the week. But as that becomes the norm, as people realize that you should have a good simply to store the value, well, then it creates a monetary premium. It becomes 10 times, 100 times as valuable, not because simply it stores value or that it has some other use case, some industrial use case, or you can eat it like smoked fish or whatever it is, but now it can't be forged, so that also its supply can't be manipulated. Because if it reaches that monetary premium, people are going to see that, holy crap, look at the demand for this. I need to produce 10 times as much of it, 100 times as much, and that premium will be wiped out until it equals its production price. For a good to be a money, it must be able to sustain a monetary premium, because a monetary premium in the price, like the value of it as a money, as a tool for indirect exchange, trumps all other potential value cases. Like, people think that, oh, there's no intrinsic value to something that's just designed to be a money. That is the most valuable use case that a good can have, because it's the highest total addressable market that exists in a market. Money is the most liquid asset. If it has the characteristics of both hardness in the sense of durability, in the sense of being portable, in the fact that it can be very value dense and extremely divisible, and it can't be forged. Unforgeable costliness, unforgeability. What was the other one that he put? You know, soundness, and basically an inability to be counterfeited. Then it suddenly becomes a source of communication that creates such a profound efficiency in specialization that it genuinely changes the structure of society. And you literally move, like his comment, the one that I'm putting at the beginning of this episode here, is that this is such a critical step in human evolution, in the creation of civilization as we know it, that this is where you stop calling it cave people. That the level of prosperity in a money-based economy is so much greater, it is incomparable to a barter-based one, that it is the step with which we leave from caves and we enter the period of houses, of castles, of cities, of civilization as we know it. Money is the source of that massive increase in productivity and specialization that allows us to be so unbelievably specialized and specific that I could literally survive off of creating a podcast and simply sharing information. That is the end game of having a secure and reliable monetary medium. And that level of specialization couldn't even, just not even close. Without money, society cannot work. I've talked about this in Nick Szabo's piece on Shelling Out, The Origins of Money. Is such a great piece to understand that. And another one actually is also by Nick Szabo, Money, Blockchains, and Social Scalability. If you really want to get at the heart of what money does for society and what the role of that tool is, and how literally it makes things possible that cannot exist otherwise, those two are absolutely critical in the understanding of that. They're so good. The concept of social scalability is one that really fascinated me. That was an entirely new perspective for me. Like, I'd already kind of begun to wrap my head around how profound money is, was in the evolution of humanity. The real big one was when I began to comprehend the idea of social scalability, to bridge communities that cannot have a social relationship with each other, where you can't know who the person is, you don't know whether they're trustworthy, you don't know a person who knows the person, like there's no social or relationship form of trust with that other person, but you need an intermediary, you need a trusted medium that allows you to do business, that is a bearer asset, that isn't someone else's liability, and that is where money comes into play. The most liquid asset in the economy, if independent and not controlled by some third party that can just manipulate it at will, like fiat money is today, it serves that role to bridge people that you explicitly may be an enemy with, that you may not be able to trust, that you may have no other values in common. Maybe you don't even speak the same language, but that tool, money, becomes a way to measure, as long as you speak the same monetary language, becomes a way to measure and store value across all social boundaries. And Giacomo hits some really fun little tidbits in this, and he hits Shelling Out, The Origins of Money is a great way to learn about kind of the history of the, he talks about all these commodity monies, Giacomo does in this one, about seashells, beads, spices, squirrel pelts, dolphin teeth, tea bricks. Nick Szabo has so many great things digging into specifics and really rich histories of all of these things. And then salt. That's always a fun thing that a lot of people don't know, is that the word salary comes from a time where salt was the most liquid asset in the economy, and obviously is extremely durable. Salt stores other things, like it keeps consumable goods and foods and stuff available. But it's one of those things where over time it got outcompeted by other goods. Giacomo brings this up in this piece in part three here, that a good that actually has a high use, a use case or a consumable use case, that's very big in some other context or in some industrial use, or that, you know, where it can be eaten as food or whatever it is, that is actually a very bad thing for money, because it lowers the stock to flow ratio. The stock is actually being depleted. So a better money is one where the stock is constant in the economy. which is a really fascinating way to think about it, because that means that the flow, the inflation rate, doesn't have such an impact on the amount that's actually in circulation, because the money doesn't have any other use except for the fact that it's incredibly good as money. And that's why gold actually becomes such a good money after it develops a monetary premium, because you no longer use it in any of its industrial use cases. Like, people don't use gold for, in processors anymore if they don't have to, or in circuitry, or in, electronics cords. Like, Peter Schiff or somebody like that will always tell you, it's like, oh, it has all these industrial uses that have intrinsic value. Well, it immediately gets priced out of those uses, because its monetary premium is so valuable that it makes using gold in those industrial use cases a stupid and cost inefficient thing to do. And that's great, because otherwise gold would get used and actually consumed, and it'd have a garbage stock to flow ratio. You'd constantly be taking it out of circulation in the actual consumption sense. Like, you'd actually be removing stock specifically. Not removing it from circulation in the sense of you're storing it, because that is still stock that is being used as money, and it will eventually re-enter circulation when someone wants to get their value back in the future. That's the whole point of indirect exchange. I'm talking about actually consuming the stock of a monetary good. So Giacomo gets really at the heart. He changes the concept of hardness that he introduced in part one. That we needed something durable to store our value for a couple of days in order to actually produce, in order to actually increase our production. So we were able to store fish for a couple of days. Well, now hardness in the monetary sense must also include the ability to, when that attempt to store value starts getting used in exchange, the ability to do indirect barter, to become a medium of exchange, now needs a new type of hardness where it must not be inflatable. Not only must it be hard in a durable sense, but it must be highly resistant to explosions in its supply or production, because that will deplete its ability to actually store value. Supply and demand, right? If you flood the market with supply, then its ability to store value, its price drops, it plummets massively. And this gets at the heart of competing monies, that the one with the superior hardness and the larger and more established network effect is orders of magnitude more valuable than its alternatives, than those it's competing against. And no matter what, there is, and I for particularly for like altcoiners and everybody who thinks we're going to have 1,000 different currencies, this, the most important aspect of money is convergence. An economy that uses one money is orders of magnitude more efficient and more productive than one that uses multiple monies, because the very value of a money is as the most liquid asset. Its liquidity in comparison to all other goods is why it produces such powerful additional value and productivity in the economy, essentially enabling specialization at an unprecedented level that can't be done otherwise. Another interesting thing that he points out in this will probably be the last thing we hit here, is just when you have competing monies, and when you have a money that doesn't have that unforgeable costliness, one of the most interesting things is that this doesn't play out quickly, because industries and supply chains are very slow moving. He points out two things, two characteristics of them, is that the production structure takes a very long time. It's very slow to adjust, and the investments in it are long-term productive investments. And then after those are set in, they can't be easily undone. And this actually leads to, rather than some gradual shift, some gradual negative feedback loop that replaces one money with another, or that prevents a bad money from being used. Instead of that gradual and what we would hope is a stable adjustment to the reality of that good's ability to increase in supply, you get something very different. You get a huge boom and bust sort of move, where the investment to increase the supply takes a long time. So the money actually works really, really good as that investment is happening and that good is being monetized. Let's take, gold, for example. Let's say that, after 5 or 6 years, I could build some sort of machine. Let's say I just figure out some extremely low cost way to produce a massive amount of gold, but it requires a huge investment, and I have to completely restructure the production cycle, and there's already a huge stock of gold. Well, gold is going to develop its monetary premium in the economy for being used as money, and it's going to increase and increase and increase as it continues to prove itself to be a really good money, because my production facility isn't ready yet. I haven't changed the supply. But now that simultaneously gets me to double, triple, quadruple my investment in creating higher production capacity, because now look how high that premium is. My profitability calculation on this investment is doubling, tripling, quadrupling. So I'm even more incentivized to build a bigger plant, to get more investment from people, to save and have even more resources devoted to this. And then when I'm finally done, now I start spitting out gold like crazy, and the flow, goes 10x, 20x, and now it absolutely plummets. So its monetization results in a huge price increase, while I am constantly incentivized to figure out even better ways to increase my production. And then as soon as my production starts to hit the market, prices start to finally adjust, and then people realize that, holy crap, this isn't keeping its value anymore. This isn't going up and storing like I thought it was. And that, in combination with my new supply, both changes the supply side, but simultaneously wipes out the demand, because the demand was for its use in its monetary premium. So as I wipe out the monetary premium, so too do I wipe out the 90% of the demand that was for the fact that it was good money. So that's just an interesting element to that, that it is because of that monetary premium and the delay in the production structure, you end up with those boom and bust cycles in a monetary good that's actually not a good good at being money. Also, it shows an unbelievable value that you can't get that anywhere. And that's another thing to stress, is how unbelievably hard to find all of those characteristics are in a single good. There's literally nothing else that can compare with Bitcoin in its monetary soundness, in the fact that there are 21 million of them, end of story. And to also have that with all of those other characteristics of divisibility, portability, verifiability, like recognition, a seriously powerful network effect, as he refers to here, which is a great analogy, a black hole sort of force for storing value. It makes any attempt at competing with Bitcoin a staggeringly unrealistic proposition at this point. And like I said, with Lightning being so incredibly useful and awesome, I'm so bullish right now. I think the end of this year and next year is going to be crazy. In a couple of days, I think probably on Friday. I don't think I want to do it tomorrow because I've got so many other things to cover. Today is Thursday. I'm stupid. Okay, maybe we will do it tomorrow. I don't know. I might wait till next week, but we will be getting into part four of this series, A Wrong Turn, and check back. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. We're going to have some good stuff tomorrow, one way or the other. So subscribe to Bitcoin Audible and follow me at Bitcoin Audible on Twitter and at The Crypto Economy. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. Don't forget to stack your sats with swanbitcoin.com/guy. Again, it gets you $10 free to start off, and it is the best way to auto-buy into a Bitcoin savings plan over the long term. I absolutely love it. It lets me sleep well at night to know that my stack is always increasing and I don't have to do anything. I don't have to think about anything. It just is. God, I wish I had had this service 7 years ago. A huge thank you to Bitcoin Magazine for this piece. This whole series, same Giacomo Zucco, really, really great mental framework to think about this. And obviously, I'm a super nerd when it comes to these kinds of concepts. Much love to the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network for sharing out Bitcoin Audible to everybody in the Bitcoin space. A lot of great shows over there. I've been a longtime listener since literally the very beginning when they were one show. So highly recommend you guys check those out. If you have not, go to letstalkbitcoin.com for that. And with that, we are out. I'll catch you all tomorrow. Share this out with everybody you know and love in the Bitcoin space. Everyone who's taking that peek down the rabbit hole, Bitcoin Audible will teach them everything they need to know about Bitcoin. And until next time, take it easy, guys.
Bitcoin people in my dick. And they're in my dick hole. I haven't even started with the Bitcoin, and the Bitcoin people are already scrambling for my arrival. It's like when an emperor from another universe is coming to your universe, and or an alien, and some people want to greet the alien, and some people want to kill the alien. Well, I'm a friendly alien. Unless you're not friendly to me, and then I'm going to bring out my green hammer laser beam, I'm going to fucking misery.